What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Breaking the Plane, episode 33. Back at it again. I'm Burge, your host, here with my enemy co-host here, Mr. Hogan. Hogan, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's another week, another dollar like CMC got, but we're going to talk about that later. But how you doing?
I'm doing a lot better than I was the last hour, trying to get my kid to bed. Telling me he wants me to stay in his room. I'm like, I ain't doing that. I got stuff to do. I did lie to him. I did tell him I was going to sleep. So that's why he wanted to go to sleep. I'm like, I'm going to bed so I can wake up and play in the morning. I'm not doing that. I had to come down here and vent my frustrations out on you. That's the goal. That's the goal today.
Go for it. I don't have kids and everybody knows that. So it's all good with me. I'm fine with it. Vent away, because that's the worst I got to deal with if it's you. I'm fine with that. That's a pretty good day. Hey, I think we got a guest here with us. Do you want to introduce
him? We do.
Somebody?
We do. We got another dad joining the podcast here. My old classmate from Daniel Webster College back in the day and resident Jacksonville Jaguars fan, John Thomas. Welcome to the pod. We appreciate all your support that you've given us throughout the last episodes. Finally, great to have you on. How are you doing today, man?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Burge and Hogan. Good to meet you via Zoom here. I'm good. I appreciate coming on and being able to complain about my team that I love and despise at the same time every year. But no, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
He's a great follow on Twitter during Jacksonville Jaguar season because he's either riding the highs or he's riding the lows and he's going right in. He doesn't hold anything back. It's great. But it's been a long time since we were in college, huh? Yeah. Long time. The school no longer exists, right? The school no longer exists. But I remember going back there, man, playing Madden and doing all that stuff. So, again, it's great to reconnect and get moving. Talking the AFC South, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah,
Hogan, we got some news. We got some news in the NFL this year. Or this week, sorry. What do we got?
We do. Unfortunately, we're going to start off with kind of a somber moment here in case you haven't heard. Recently, one of the most legendary linemen to play the game, he's known across the league, one of the probably the strongest guys to ever play. Larry Allen recently passed away, which is really, really unfortunate. He was only 52, way too young, obviously. They haven't determined what he passed away from, but just you want to talk about a pinnacle lineman. At the time that he played, I mean, looking at his all-time, again, there's no stats for linemen, which is fine, but if you're looking at his all-time accolades, his highlights, his awards, I mean, he was a Super Bowl champ, six-time first-team All-Pro, 11-time Pro Bowler, all-rookie team, all-90s all-decade team, 2000s all-decade team. The dude, just a laundry list of awesomeness. Like, Larry Allen was the dude, and I think, like, the biggest thing that was what he broke the bench press record out that the combine, I want to say, I thought he did it like something stupid, like close to 50 times or something like that, 225 pounds for like 48 reps or something crazy. But yeah, this is me just drooling all over him. Cause I love me, my fatties. And it's really, really sad to see that he's no longer with us. I hope, you know, best wishes to his family and everything and everybody's impacted by that. But yeah, Larry Allen, unfortunately, gone way too soon.
It's wild that he was 6 years in a row. He was an All Pro. Like,
yeah,
that's just absolute beast. Definitely, definitely sad to see that. And, you know, it's kind of weird. You know, you don't see any details on how, you know, considering how young he was, it's too sad. So like you said, yeah, absolutely best wishes to his family. John, I don't know if you got anything you want to add on Larry.
Yeah, I think, obviously all the All Pro, All Pro years and Pro Bowl years, et cetera, are kind of like his legacy. I think Emmitt Smith's record is kind of directly correlated to the whole offensive line in front of him, but Larry Allen kind of led the way there. So I think, yeah, he's the best to ever do it. It's a really unfortunate.
Absolutely. Let's move on. Some big money contracts were dished out in the NFL. I think yesterday and today is what it ends up being. We're recording on Tuesday here. We'll start with the first one. And it was an extension that I think everybody saw coming. We knew it was coming. It was just waiting for the hammer to fall. And that is Justin Jefferson of the Minnesota Vikings getting a 4-year, $140 million extension with $110 million guaranteed as a wide receiver. The NFL's money is getting stupid for these guys. Jefferson's the best receiver in the league. He deserves it. Like, you got to pay that kind of talent. But I think we talked about it on a previous episode, Hogan, where we're just, I think it was with the quarterbacks, where like the money is just insane.
It is. But at the same time, like we talked about in the previous episodes, is these guys are so desperate to retain the talent that they have at this time that they're going to pay stupid money. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Jefferson, he's owed every penny of that. He's a once in a generation talent. The way that he's been able to transcend the wide receiver position, Minnesota has not had a wide receiver like him since Randy Moss. There's no other way to say it. And, you know, even though he got dinged up last year, it's one of those guys that he's, you know, franchise changing. You do not let him go. You throw every dollar bill you got at him. And like I said, they got JJ McCarthy going there as a rookie. That's going to make life a lot easier for him to transition to the NFL when you got a guy like Justin Jefferson to throw to. I mean, like I said, I could throw the ball at him and he's probably going to catch it with 14 guys around him. So, hey, Justin Jefferson, you're owed every penny you get, man. Congratulations to you. I mean, it's crazy, but well-deserved.
Absolutely. John, you want to toss in any thoughts on JJ?
Yeah, I think the timing works out really well for the Vikings, bringing in the other JJ McCarthy in on a rookie deal. So the ability to really pay one of your the best wide receiver we've probably seen since Calvin Johnson, I would say, while you have a rookie who is on a relatively cheap deal, I think works out really well for them, but every dollar deserved. I want a quick plug, like the catch against the Bills. I forget what the exact scenario was, but it was fourth down and it was on a game winning drive in 2023. Was like probably top three to four catches I've ever seen in my life. Like, the dude is insane.
Yeah. Wasn't that catch like fourth and like a mile too? A desperate play and unbelievable play. I remember watching that live and being just like, obviously me, the resident Bills hater here. Like, I was like, let's go.
The big thing that's going to be interesting though is what is this going to set the market at for CD Lamb coming up? Because you sent me that graphic, mm-hmm. right? Where their numbers, granted, I think that's taken a little out of context, because if you look at Jefferson's overall history, where if he didn't get dinged up, he didn't get hurt this past year, he blows away CD Lamb as far as I'm concerned, you know, overall talent wise. No knock on CD. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal player. But I mean, it's going to set that bar where the Cowboys are going to have to pay out of their ass to keep CD at least either happy or in Dallas, one of the two. And it's going to be interesting to see what this ends up like doing for the wide receiver market going forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, it always seems like these guys just, the next guy that gets paid is the highest paid receiver or whatever the position is in the league. It always is just continuing to grow. So you have to think that CeeDee Lamb is going to get the same, if not more, money from Dallas. Because, I mean, Dallas is probably, a little hesitant after what they did with Amari Cooper when they shipped him out to see what happened. I don't think they want to make the same mistake with CeeDee Lamb. Who knows? Jerry Jones is very unpredictable, but
no shit. Clown. He's a clown.
Yeah, I think it's tough when your GM is the one writing the checks. There's a little bit of conflict of interest there, but I do think CeeDee Lamb's probably the best wide receiver the Cowboys have seen since Urban. And I assume they will retain him, but it will be all of what Justin Jefferson's getting this year, I think.
I'd be curious to see if CeeDee Lamb ends up getting paid like that, if something happens with Dak, if maybe they move on from Dak, if they choose in that situation, because Dak's kind of been an underachiever, you know, in the postseason when the going gets tough in the postseason. And it'll be interesting to see what ramifications come from that. Should Jerry Jones open the wallet for CeeDee Lamb? Absolutely.
They got Trey Lance waiting. They traded for Trey Lance. I mean, hey, I'm throwing it out there. I think Dak is, you know, he 99% of the time he gets way too much flack thrown his way, because I think he's actually a pretty decent, like, I would take him. He's a good quarterback. Does he choke towards the end? Absolutely. But compared to the rest of the NFL, I would say he's one of the top tier guys for like getting you to where you need to go. It's just, he always chokes at the end. But again, they traded for Trey Lance for a reason. You don't know what's going to happen. Jerry, like you said, I mean, Jerry might be going senile. He might try and throw anybody out there, a quarterback at this point.
Yeah, who knows, man. But let's move on to another team that made a splash extension today, actually. And that's the San Francisco 49ers. They were the Super Bowl runners-up last year, unfortunately. But they ink Christian McCaffrey to a monster extension. 2 years, $38 million is what it ends up coming out to. And, you know, for me, he's worth every penny of this extension. He is an absolute game breaker when he's on the field and he's healthy. And last year he remained healthy. Obviously, that's always been kind of the knock throughout his career is, you know, he's one hit away from being down and out. But when he's on the field, he's easily the best running back in the league. Dual threat and, you know, major piece for that San Francisco 49ers offense last year, and why Brock Purdy probably has had as much success as he's had, because he's had that all that talent around him. And, you know, it starts with CMC and then, of course, their receivers. But what do you think about the extension, Hogan? Are you kind of in alignment with me on this, or do you think that they may regret doing it?
I mean, I love to play devil's advocate, right? I mean, on one hand, he's absolutely the best running back in the game right now. Like I said before we started recording, he's a unicorn. He could not run the ball once but still be the best wide receiver on the team if he wanted to be, which when do you ever see that from the running back position other than maybe like the LaDainian Tomlinson in the early 2000s? Other than that, running backs don't really catch the ball as well as CMC does. That being said, there's a reason why the running back position is a dying market and they don't get paid as much as they do, because like you touched on, one bad knee, one bad ankle roll, one bad anything, and these guys' careers are like gone like that, you know. And I'm with today's, you know, technology and medical field and all that stuff, it's a lot easier to not say that as much, because you guys got Adrian Peterson come back from the horrific knee injury he had and then rushes for 2,000 yards again. I think Adrian Peterson was a unicorn as a pure straight up running back, but CMC is just, he's definitely a game changer. And the thing with the 49ers, though, is putting that money towards him and, you know, hopefully riding Brock Purdy as long as they can with him still being on his rookie deal, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to pay, though, with other guys that are coming up soon. I mean, the talk is about Ayuk trying to get out of there. And, you know, you got a lot of different guys that need to be paid on the offense and defensive side of the ball. So we'll see if it works out for him. I hope for the best, because I don't have any qualms with 49ers, and I love watching CMC when he's healthy. It's fantastic to see him run and catch and do whatever he does. But end of the day, worth the extension as far as I'm concerned. Will it pan out for him? To be determined.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything there. I do think it's going to be interesting with IU coming up end of contract, Debo being very expensive next year and then being off contract after that, and then Purdy rookie deal running out. Like, at some point you have to make decisions on people leaving the roster, especially if you're putting almost $20 million a year towards your running back. I think the injury thing is a little overplayed. Obviously he's missed time, so like it's applicable to him, but really any player with one big hit is potentially done for the year or longer. Running backs take a little bit more of a beating than other positions, but I do think he's worth the money.
Absolutely. And, you know, you guys brought up Ayuk. I think I saw today that he is sitting out of the mandatory mini camps, you know, hoping for a new contract. He did request a trade, didn't he? He did request a trade before the draft.
I think his brother did on like social media. Oh. Stupid. You know, his brother was like, we out after the Super Bowl loss or something ridiculous. I don't know, but maybe.
Yeah. I think it was a little overplayed. I don't think it was necessarily directly from him, but there was some rumors. Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely bring up a good point, John, about them having to pay all that talent. And obviously Purdy, I think it's this year his deal runs out. So they're going to have to give him a raise if they decide to move forward with him as their quarterback. I think they absolutely should. But yeah, Debo, you have Ayuk, obviously CMC, and then George Kittle still there. And, you know, the salary cap is just going to continue to go up. We talked about that on a previous episode with the quarterbacks, but at the same time, just because the salary cap's going up, every position is getting more expensive and they've guys on their defense that are expensive as well. So it'll be interesting to see how John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan kind of build the roster out, you know, next year, after next season and beyond, because they're going to be due for some changes at some point. That window's going to close, just like, you know, you're kind of seeing the Buffalo Bills go through it right now, and every team ends up going through it at some point. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how that extension plays out. I, for one, am hoping that CMC stays healthy and is able to continue doing what he's been doing. Cause you know, when you have a player like that, that's electric out there, it's makes for a better product. Like I always enjoyed watching the 49ers because, you know, him basically when he got traded there, it was like, let's go. Finally, he's on a good team to be able to make some noise and go somewhere. He got out of Carolina. So we'll see where that one plays out, but we're going to move on now. We're going to go into our first divisional breakdown of the summer. We've teased this to you guys for the last couple of weeks that we were going to be doing something like this, and we're very excited to get into it now. It's a good way to pass the time in the dull part of the offseason where we're breaking down the divisions and seeing where fans of teams in those divisions end up, because us as Patriots fans, we don't really pay attention to all the other divisions as closely as others. So obviously John has made it clear that he is a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, where Hogan has been having fun with the fan base, to say the least, over the last couple of weeks.
Which the is very why, least.
Which is why it's appropriate that it's the first division that we wanted to talk about and get another perspective to maybe put Hogan in his place. It'd be kind of nice. To have that happen. But yeah, John, I want to start off talking about how did you become a Jacksonville Jaguars fan of all? You're from New England up here, right? Originally
from New England, born and raised. Yes.
So I've always been curious about how you become a Jacksonville Jaguars fan.
Sure. Let me walk you through it. It's pretty simple. It started from the beginning. So they came into the league in 1995. They were an expansion team with the Panthers. I was 6 years old, I believe, when they came into the league. I believe I liked the animal and also the colors. Throwback to the original logo, the best logo of the Jacksonville history. So I think I just liked them based off just not really any sort of football knowledge, just kind of like I had family in Jacksonville. I like the animal. I like the color, et cetera. And then they immediately were a powerhouse in the NFL. They did not make the playoffs the first year, but they made playoffs 4 years in a row. After that, they went to two conference championship games. They lost to the New England Patriots in 1996, where I think you guys went on to lose to Brett Favre in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And then in 1999, they basically were the team to beat in the NFL. They went 14-2. The only team that they could not beat that year was the Tennessee Titans, where they lost to twice in the regular season and then lost to in the conference championship game, where they went on to lose to also the Rams. So whoever beats us to go to the Super Bowl loses. Oh, no, sorry. Brett Favre's Packers. So my mistake. And yeah, so they were easy to kind of stick with just because they were so good right away. And then they kind of fell off a cliff for a very long time. We've had a few spurts of like playoff berths and one conference championship too, which we lost to again, the New England Patriots, where I want to go on record and say Miles Jack was not down. That was a fumble recovery, which should have been returned for a touchdown, which would have sealed the game. And for the record, I do think the Jaguars would have beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl that year. So that's about all.
Yeah, that's for me, that's wild because, you know, obviously we're the same age. So like, I didn't even know Jacksonville at that point. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, my first real like diehard into the NFL and the Patriots was the year that they went and lost the Super Bowl to Brett Favre. Like that was at least my earliest memories for that. But I have to say that I have an enormous amount of respect for you to stick by your team after the, what was it? 10, it seemed like it was forever. They had a couple of, like you said, a couple of those spurts where they were in the playoffs, but they, you know, they didn't end up going anywhere. I have a hard time doing that. Obviously, I'm a spoiled Patriots fan for 20 years. Obviously, us coming of age to be adults when they were running through the dynasty and doing all that. It's been a tough couple of years for the Patriots, as you know, and us fans, you know, but I have enormous amount of respect for the fact that you stuck by them as long as you did there. Hogan, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, enjoy Mac Jones, sucker.
I will. He looks like clips from camp looks like he is having the time of his life.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you put a helmet on the kid and he runs around and does his little dance. Of course he's going to be happy. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's quite the ride there. I know Jacksonville really opened my eyes up. Specifically, was it 2007 when Garrard actually went toe to toe with Brady in that divisional round after you guys went down there or went to Pittsburgh and knocked off the Steelers? That was a big upset. I remember that. And then, you know, Garrard was kind of unproven at that point, taking over for Leftwich. And then, like I said, I think like between Brady and Garrard, there was like 3 incompletions in the entire game or something crazy going to the AFC Championship. So Jacksonville definitely, they have their spurts where you respect the hell out of them. Like I said, 2007 and then again, 2018, when, I mean, Blake Bortles of all people leading you guys to the AFC Championship. I mean, he was a clown. I'll say that. I'm sorry. It's Blake Bortles. But the rest of that team, that defense, Jalen Ramsey, you guys legitimately were contenders that year. So all the respect in the world to you. And like I said, I think it's more fun when you got those teams that people kind of either forget about or they're considered obscure or whatever in this part of the region, where if you guys are good, like that's makes it fun. That's fun football. Like that year, 2018, was it? Brady was the only quarterback going into the championship weekend, where it was Bortles was the other one. And then it was what, Case Keenum and Foles on the other side. So it's like, that was just insane. Other than Brady, it was like, who the hell are these guys and what's going to happen? But yeah. And I got to ask, so that's a Maurice Jones-Drew jersey, right? Yeah. Or no?
Yes. Okay. Maurice Jones-Drew.
All right. I rock with that because I like Maurice Jones-Drew. So yeah. I got to ask, who's your favorite Jacksonville player of all time?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I originally put this on because he comes to mind first. He was actually one of the first like celebrities or athletes that I interacted with on Twitter way back when. And I just had a lot of respect for him being kind of like a muscle hamster, I guess. Like he was just such a fun player, and he was also fun to listen to like after games and stuff like that. I think Fred Taylor is like, based on the lack of love he gets from like the media, and like just get that guy into the Hall of Fame. Like he's a top 20 running back, and I just don't think he'll ever get there because he played for Jacksonville for so long. He did have a stint in the Patriots as well when he was kind of wrapping up his career. Like one of the best players I've ever seen on TV. And so Fred Taylor or Maurice Jones-Drew, it's kind of a toss up.
Maurice Jones-Drew has one of the best all time pause moments on live TV. Have you seen that clip, John?
I don't know. Tell me about it.
They were talking about the Super Bowl, and I think it was on one of the NFL shows. And the host, I forget who it was, but he's like, "Is it safe to say that Patrick Mahomes can ride the D?" And then Maurice Jones-Drew starts talking, and he looks at him, and he's like, "The defense." And I'm like, I watched that clip. I piss myself laughing every time I see it. It's outstanding. My favorite moment for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I think you saw when I shared it on Twitter, was John Henderson, the guy getting slapped in the face. And he's like,
"Come on,
let's
Joe.
Come on, Joe. Let's go, baby. You made me bleed. I can taste it." Another clip that cracks me up. That guy like must have been an absolute madman.
He was a monster, yeah. And I think that's one of the fun things about the Jaguars that I kind of like look back on fondly, is they've had like really, really strong players. They just haven't been able to put it together for any type of consistency. But in the middle of the defensive line with John Henderson and Marcus Stroud was one of the most formidable two that have been around in a long time. I think they had some stat of like 20 plus games without a 100-yard rusher against them during that time. And, you know, Jimmy Smith back then was another like absolute all-star who just, again, like they couldn't put the pieces together to come out with a Super Bowl berth, never mind Super Bowl victory, which is unfortunate, but they've had like really fun players to watch.
Yeah, didn't they have Mark Brunell as a quarterback, Fred Taylor as a running back, and then Jimmy Smith and Keenan McCardell as the two receivers? Like that was like a pretty solid offense. I remember that was right when I got into playing fantasy football. And I remember I needed to have both those guys.
Yeah. Thunder and lightning, I believe. Yeah, no, and I actually shared a clip of Jimmy Smith against the 2000 Ravens. I don't know if either of you have seen that stat line, but he went for almost 300 yards and 3 touchdowns against the 2000 Ravens, which is like the top 1-2 defenses of all time. He absolutely smoked them. I think it's one of the most dominant performances by a wide receiver in a single game period, just based on who his opponent was. But yeah, that guy was an absolute monster.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, but I want to get your thoughts now. How do you feel about the Jacksonville Jaguars going into the 2024 season? Like, are you optimistic? Are you worried? How do you think they're going to perform this year?
I'm optimistic every year. I refuse to learn my lesson. No, I am optimistic. I do think it's talked about a little too much. And I think really you have to put together 17 games within the same season in order to be really considered like a strong team. However, they had a stretch of games, which was around 17 regular season games from the end of 2022 to the beginning of 2023, where they won like 14 of them or something like that. Trevor Lawrence got hurt last year, and a lot of players actually got hurt. Their offensive line was very banged up. Christian Kirk went down late with a non-contact injury, which was unfortunate. Their defensive line was very banged up. Devon Hamilton was their defensive tackle, who was dealing with a spinal injury or something like that, and missed a lot of the season. They had a lot of key players that were out last year. No excuses. You need to win games and you're going to have injuries. Like, I'm not sitting here saying they would have made it to the Super Bowl if they weren't hurt. I think they probably wrap up the division if they're a little bit healthier and they don't have like the epic collapse that we saw. But I think Trevor Lawrence, and I'm so looking forward to the Trevor Lawrence discussion here, I do think that he's not elite, to your point, Hogan. He is not a top 2 to 3 quarterback in the league. I do think at the end of the season, we do have the discussion about, is he top 5? Is he top 7? And I think he pushes with the pieces he has around him into that discussion.
Yeah. Okay. See, you and I, we're on the same page. We're off to a phenomenal start here because I agree with you. That's what I'm saying is I never said that he was like the elite of the elite or anything like that. My point was just that the potential is there. And I think we've seen sparks of it. And that's the big thing is if he can put together a full season, you know, praying he stays healthy, because like I said, it's always, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but if he stays healthy and that team performs the way that they should, like you touched on at the end of 2022, they were rolling and that huge comeback win against the Chargers that nobody saw them doing. And then they only came up a little bit short against Kansas City, correct? Yeah. So they had the potential to do some more damage than they did. And last year they were off to such a good start, and then where it just all fell apart. And I guess I'll admit I'm wrong. I didn't realize that Lawrence was hurt as bad as he was with, you know, either was it concussions and a sprained ankle or shoulder. I don't know. He had a laundry list from what it sounds like. Yeah. But again, like you touched on, the injury part is he still played, and it's tough to not knock him when they're not able to win, even when he's still playing. However, I do think the potential is there that if he can take that next step, there's no reason he can't enter that top 5 discussion or be considered elite if he puts together a hell of a season, which he's capable of doing. You got the coach down there with Doug Peterson, who turned Nick Foles into Big Nick Dick, or Big Dick Nick. That's words. Dyslexia over here. But he, look what he did with him and what he was able to do against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So it's like, if anybody in the NFL can make magic happen with Trevor Lawrence, I'm going to have faith in Doug Peterson. Jacksonville is in a really, really good spot right now, where we're going to get into the rest of the division in a little bit, but there's no reason they can't go back and win it again this year.
Yeah, fully agreed. And I think they've done what they needed to do in free agency. They didn't land anyone that was like, you know, superstar status. I do think the Eric Armstead pickup, as we talked about him, no longer on the 49ers, was one of the better signings that they had. He can be dominant in the middle. Health is always the question, obviously, but also Walter Payton, man of the year for the 49ers, like very good influence, very good leader, strong leader. They did what they needed to in the draft. I like the draft haul that they pulled. I think Brian Thomas is going to, you know, I don't think he's going to blow the doors off year one, but I do think that he can enter that realm of discussion with guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, these like top tier wide receivers that when he gets a little more crisp in his route running and gets a little more crisp on his release and things like that, the guy is an absolute athletic freak. And I think that defenses are not going to look forward to playing against him for a bunch of reasons, but they added more depth to their defensive line. I think they pulled a really good class this year. Again, not really getting any of those like top tier, oh my God, Marvin Harrison or Romo Dunze or guys like that, but really a really strong class.
Are you worried at all about losing Calvin Ridley?
Yeah, so I think the Calvin Ridley saga has been exhausting as a Jaguars fan. I do think that he was for taking a year off or being not taking a year off, he was forced to not play for a year. I think he performed to about as well as he was going to. I do think, and obviously I'm going to be biased because he's no longer on the team and he's a Titan, which means that I am no longer a fan of Calvin Ridley. I do think Trevor Lawrence sort of helped him get the numbers that he did. There is a there were quite a few times throughout last season where he dropped really big catches, most of which would have been touchdowns. He ran wrong routes and things like that, and now he's talking about the Titans will allow him to run a full route tree when he wasn't able to in Jacksonville. Like, I think there's a lot of like misconceptions around. I think it's warranted because again he was out for a year, but I do think that his production, 1,000 yards, will be hard to replace with Brian Thomas alone this year. I do think the addition of Gabe Davis and the loss of Zay Jones kinds of offsets the difference in Calvin Ridley and Brian Thomas. So the big thing I like about Brian Thomas and also Gabe Davis is they're going to stretch the field, which we have not had a receiver being able to do that in a very long time. And I think that opens up a lot of underneath stuff for Travis Etienne out of the backfield, Christian Kirk out of the slot, and then Evan Ingram, who had an amazing year last year. I think he kind of repeats that, to be honest.
I was actually a little surprised how good Evan Ingram was last year, because by the time he was done with the Giants, he kind of seemed, I don't want to say he was washed because he was still, relatively young, but like I remember when he first came into the league, like he was a fantasy stud tight end that I had on my team, and he was fantastic. And then he seemed to kind of disappear. And obviously a lot of that is predicated on what the Giants ended up turning into. But talking about Trevor Lawrence, there's no excuse for him to not be able to kind of take that next level, health aside, given the weapons that he has there. I mean, Travis Etienne is an unbelievable athlete, and seeing how he performed, what was it, last year? It was 2 years ago, right? That he tore his Achilles.
It was his rookie year,
His
so he
rookie.
has two full seasons
Two full
now.
seasons. And he doesn't look like he had missed a step with that injury, which is incredible for a running back. And I like to see him continue to build on what he's doing too. To help out that offense there. Do the Texans scare you? We're
That hurt.
very pro Texans here on
I know.
this
That hurt.
podcast.
Yeah, no. The Texans, this is hopefully not a shock to anyone. Like, the Texans are a legit team, and they are one of the most talented in the league. Never mind the division, never mind the conference. Like, they should compete for, the top few seeds of the conference, and they should, if all things go their way, should win the division, in my opinion. I do think we'll get into predictions of records later, but I do think the Jaguars and the Colts are very narrowly kind of like in the mix of all of that with the Texans. I do have a few stats that I think maybe the Texans are a little bit they're not a sure thing. I guess that's my big takeaway. They have all the pieces. The coaching staff seems great. Like, they seem like they really have everything to take over this year. Last year, I think people are downplaying the struggles that they had in the sort of like meteoric rise at the end of the season to kind of just make the playoffs because the Jaguars fell off so hard. So I have a few games from last year, if you can indulge me for a second, that will prove my point that maybe we should question mark the Texans for this year.
You're
Do you want
sounding
to answer?
like you're sounding like our buddy Mike Barber on Twitter right now. He's I'm looking at some of his tweets that he was shooting at us today, and one of the ones in bold I'm looking at right now, Texans pretenders or contenders. So it sounds like you're about to echo his statement here. What do you got for us, John?
Yeah, so there were some stretches of games last year that I think the Texans either looked bad or were just good enough to get over the finish line against teams that we don't consider really like strong contenders right now. So I'm going to read through their schedule real quick. I'll make it short. So they get blown out week one by the Ravens. Kind of expected. You have a rookie quarterback. The Ravens were a top team last year. Not a big deal. They get handily beat by the Colts, which actually a funny sound clip came out recently with a Colts linebacker talking about CJ Stroud. Basically saying CJ Stroud said to him, "I cooked you guys two times last year." And looking at the score, 31-20, Anthony Richardson handled CJ in that game. He did throw for 300 yards, which I think is what he's referring to with like the cooking. But you lose by two scores. I don't think you can say I cooked you. they blow out the Jaguars, which we lose in Jacksonville to the Texans every single year. It's kind of like tradition around here. Some defensive miscues, et cetera. They blow out the Steelers. Perfect. I think they were a contender. That's a good showing. They get beat by the Falcons, which is a head scratcher to me. The Falcons were not a competent team last year and should not have beat the Texans. But it's on the road, so maybe you give them the pass there. They beat the Saints by 7 points at home. Probably want to see a little bit more there. They go on their bye. They come back and lose to the Panthers by 2 points. The Panthers won two games last year. One was to the Falcons. One was to the Texans. Jaguars beat them 26-0 with a backup quarterback. That should have never happened. That's a big red flag, in my opinion. They beat the Buccaneers in a shootout by two. They beat the Bengals by three. They beat the Cardinals by five. Good stretch there. Close games, though. Lose to Jacksonville, which I think they're going to split again this year. We'll talk about it later. They beat the Broncos by a single score. They get blown out by the Jets. I don't know if you remember that game, 30-6 with who was the quarterback. I think he's in Minnesota right now. They beat the Titans in overtime by a field goal. Titans were a bad team last year. They shouldn't have, that shouldn't have been that close. Get blown out by the Browns, beat the Titans, beat the Colts by one score. They obviously blew out the Browns in the playoffs and then got smoked by the Ravens. So I think overall, really positive season. I think they are the Jaguars of 2023 coming into this year. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, though.
Absolutely. I mean, I know for me, being a Texans honk because the Patriots suck, I'm concerned about a sophomore slump from CJ Stroud. That's my thing. Nobody expected him to be what he was coming out of the draft, or at least not to be as good as he was in year one down there, especially with a new coaching staff, new system, all that. They were very much in a rebuild year that last year, and they blew out the expectations. So for me, with the Texans, that's my biggest concern, is the sophomore slump.
I think we got to take a step back too and realize that the Texans were the worst team in the league 2 years ago. Like I think the reason why they're put on such a pedestal is because they went from worst to playoffs, which how often do you see that? That'd be like Carolina winning 12 games this year and winning the division. You know what I mean? It's kind of the similar aspect where I don't see Carolina winning five games this year, but that's besides the point. I think it's interesting where CJ Stroud did enough to get them over the hump, to get them in the, put them in a good enough position to at least, you know, get a two against the Ravens in the playoffs. I don't see him really having as much of a slump as you're predicting, because it seems like the GM and the coaches kind of were trying to take care of him by bringing in Diggs the way that they did. A lot of people forget Diggs is down there now. So they got a tremendous wide receiver core down there with Diggs, Zanico, and then, Tank Dell. And then on top of that too, didn't they just get Joe Mixon from the Bengals as well, mm-hmm. running back? So on paper, that's a good offense as far as I'm concerned. If everybody stays healthy and they are all able to mesh together, that's a formidable. And on top of that too, you touched on, John, their coaching staff. I'm blanking on his name now. D'Amico Ryans did wonders with that 49ers defense before he left there. And if he can have any kind of success with this Houston's defense now, I mean, the sky's the limit for those guys. But again, they're still only removed 1 year from being the worst team in the league. So you got to pump the brakes until you actually see the product on the field.
Yeah, they are the most talented roster, in my opinion. Maybe 49ers probably push them for that, but I think it's close. I think, to your point, D'Amico Ryans is turning out to be a really good head coach, and has put together a defensive roster that rivals anyone on paper. Again, we'll see how it happens in the regular season. I think Will Anderson is going to be an annoying 10 to 15 or more sacks per year every single year that he's playing. They brought in Danielle Hunter, who is on paper like a really good pass rusher. They have Christian Harris at linebacker. They got in, I think, the fourth or fifth round. Like, it was a huge steal. I wanted him so badly on the Jaguars that year, and unfortunately it didn't happen. We took other linebackers earlier who have not been as good as Christian Harris. I think their secondary is gross. Like Derek Stingley is very good. Jalen Petrie at safety is very good. Jimmy Ward at safety is Pro Bowl, all pro level player. Jeff Okuda was a pickup this year at cornerback that I think was really underrated, a relatively cheap signing, which is annoying for the Jaguars. and then Lassiter, the draft pick out of Michigan, is going to probably start in the nickel. And that secondary is as good as I can think of within the league. Like the offense is stacked, the defense is just as stacked. So again, it's their, the world is their oyster this year.
Definitely make for some exciting matchups against that receiver room in Jacksonville twice next year for sure. What are your thoughts on the Colts? I know you said you kind of lumped them kind of all in the almost kind of the same category. Obviously Anthony Richardson coming back from injury this year should throw a wrinkle into that, but I want to get your thoughts on what you think the Colts are going to be this year. They did pretty good with Gardner Minshew last year at the helm.
Yeah, I love Gardner Minshew, so no hate from me. I won't speak badly about the mullet messiah that we used to have. I do think they are a very talented football team. I think Anthony Richardson needs to figure out how to stay healthy, and the design in which that he's going to play the game makes it very difficult for him to do that. We saw it even before he was actually injured for the long term last year. Like he was taking hits very frequently. Mm-hmm. He was not protecting himself, and he was leaving games for a certain amount of plays in order to get healthy again so he could come back into the game. If he doesn't change up how he's playing football, that is going to continue happening. And I think if he's healthy and playing to the level that he's capable of, I think he works his way eventually into like MVP talks or offensive player of the year talks and things like that. I just don't know if he ever is going to be able to like change his game enough to remain 17 games starting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that from last year, just seeing him take those hits. It's like, dude, you got to learn when to slide. If you learn when to slide, you're gonna prolong your NFL career exponentially, it feels like, in today's game.
Yeah, I like Anthony Richardson a lot. I liked him at Florida, and I liked him coming out. It's unfortunate that he's within our division, but I think if he stays healthy, like their defense is very solid. Their wide receiver core is great. I think a little underrated with Josh Downs. Like I'm expecting bigger things out of Josh Downs this year. Michael Pittman is one of those guys who I think you can have a conversation about top 20 to 25 wide receivers in the league. And then A.D. Mitchell coming out of Texas this year, I think was it was kind of strange. His slide, some character issues that were discussed. I don't know if those are real or not, but those three guys should be able to really allow AR to produce numbers.
Not to mention Jonathan Taylor in the backfield.
Yeah, he needs to come back. He's I think it's been 2 years in a row that he's been dealing with injuries and not really been the production that we saw kind of the first year he broke out. I'm interested to see what he does this year.
Absolutely. He's one of those guys that's got a lot of miles on him. He ran the ball a lot in college. So we'll see. I mean, he just got a big contract last year. So we'll see if he can continue going. I know from a fantasy perspective, a lot of people have high hopes for him to continue doing what he was doing a few years back when he had that monster year. So we'll see what happens there. The Titans, they seem like a team that a little bit of a mess, going through a little bit of turnover.
A little bit. Come on, man. They're garbage. I'll say it. John, I'm going to steal the thunder from you real quick. I think Tennessee is just fucked. I'll say it right now. Getting rid of Vrabel was the dumbest thing they could have done. He was a too good of a coach to just let go the way that they did. I mean, granted, it wasn't a good year, but I mean, for what he was able to accomplish with Will, I never get his name right. Levis, whatever. What he was able to do with him as a rookie wasn't half bad, but at the same time, like he was a rookie and he was thrown to an ancient DeAndre Hopkins, and that was really the only thing they had going other than Derrick Henry limping down the field half the time. So their defense doesn't scare me. Their offense doesn't scare me. I think Tennessee's in big, big trouble. I see them finishing last in the division. All right, John, now you can tell me how wrong I am. Or how right I am. Or how right I am.
Everything you said is terribly wrong. I have them now. No, the Titans, I think, are like a sizable gap from the rest of the three teams within the division. I am not a believer in Levis. I think that He showed some spark in a game. I think he threw four touchdowns within one game, but then over the next eight, he threw like four touchdowns as well. So I think he has the ability, and he has some playmakers on the outside. Calvin Ridley will put up numbers and is a really good route runner and fast. I think Tyler Boyd coming in is an interesting addition, although he doesn't move me to someone who is going to be this like crazy playmaker that's going to really like bail Levis out when he's running or needs to scramble and find people downfield. DeAndre Hopkins, as much as he's been within the division, I have huge respect for DeAndre Hopkins. I think he's one of the best wide receivers that we've seen as far as like having no one to throw the ball to him. It's been the story of his career, and I really wish we saw him playing with like higher caliber quarterbacks, because I do think he underproduced as much as he overproduced probably for the quarterback talent he had. Tony Pollard in the backfield, I don't like the pickup. I didn't like him in when Dallas moved away from Zeke Elliott and went to Tony Pollard. I'm not a believer in Pollard personally. I think he's a solid athlete. I just don't see him being really like the difference maker in the backfield. Tyjae Spears, I like a lot in the backfield, actually. He was a guy who I was hopeful that the Jaguars were going to target when he came out. He has some health injuries. I don't really foresee him being the next Derrick Henry, but I think he's a solid player. T'Vondre Sweat was an interesting pick. I'm curious if you guys agree there. I think he's overweight, and I think that he can be a solid player. I think he's going to take some development, and I think he's expected to start day one. So I'm interested if you guys have any input on that.
You're gonna throw it to me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, like I said, moving away from Vrabel and that coaching staff that they had before is not conducive to what I think is going to be successful down there. I'm just gonna throw it back real quick, because I don't want to change the subject, but I saw a video recently, I think it was Barstool posted, they had the Titans GM on that what is it, Bussing with the Boys or whatever the hell they call it show. And it was like they had him describing the moment that they had to tell his kids that they got rid of Vrabel. And I guess like the kid, the like 5-year-old son, like asked his dad, "What the hell are you doing?" And it was just like they all started dying laughing, because it was like the kid's smarter than the fucking father at this point. So I don't know. I don't have faith in a lot of what Tennessee's doing, regardless of who they're picking in the draft, because I just go back to the fact that they traded away AJ Brown the way that they did in the first round. And who was it? Is it Burks, or was his name, right?
Traylon Burks.
Didn't the report come out that he's like going to be trying to contribute on special teams or some bullshit today? Like, so Swift or whatever his name, I'm sorry. You're on Tennessee for a reason. You're not going to do anything. That's the way I'm looking at it. And you know what? Tennessee fans, guess what? Jacksonville, I'm on your side now. Let's go Jacksonville. Fuck you, Tennessee. That's where we're at. So here we go.
I was going to expect you to push back on the Swift stuff. Texas guy wearing the hat right now.
I don't care. He was originally from Georgia, right? No, I'm thinking the wrong guy.
I don't know where he's from. I mean, they have some playmakers. I think their secondary is pretty decent. I think that, you know, I think they'll win a few games. I do have them like finishing fourth in the division. I think maybe we'll see how Titans fans like my hot take maybe in a bit here on the Titans, but I do think that they're just going, they have a tough schedule. Their schedule is actually like pretty difficult for finishing fourth last year. I just don't see them doing much this year.
Yeah. I the report on Burks though was eye opening. Cause like, I think the coach came out and said like, he's on special teams. He's got to prove that he can be a contributor before he starts getting reps on offense again. You hear that, you're like, red flags start going up everywhere.
I mean, good thing they saved themselves all that money that AJ Brown just made so that they could sign Calvin Ridley. That's what I'll say about that.
So insane to me. Like they said, and even though I love my Texas boys, it's like at the same time, once they leave Texas, I'm just like, all right, if you're not going to the Pats, I don't give two shits about you. But like, I just don't think Tennessee, all the decisions Tennessee has made in the last few years has just been so wrong and so bad for that organization that was on the cusp of being really, really good for that, what, 3 or 4 year stretch where they made the AFC championship. Was it twice? Once, or at least once, with freaking Tannehill, you know, leading them, or Derrick Henry was, you know, just feed him the rock. They're the Tennessee is the reason Brady left the Patriots. So again, there you go. Fuck you, Tennessee. That's what I'm going to keep saying now, because that now I've got them in my crosshairs. But they had all the potential in the world, And it's like they're going in the opposite direction of the rest of the division. So back burner, move on. Who do we got next?
That's the whole division.
Yeah, oh, that's right. It is. My bad.
Got Sorry. Triggered there by Tennessee, man. Jeez.
I did. I just yeah. brought up like bad memories. I don't like Tennessee anymore. Especially for Vrabel. Being a former Patriots guy, I love Vrabel. Like, I love him as a player and then as a coach. Like, how do you not love what he brought to the table, whether it was at Ohio State or what he did? He was even with Houston for a little while as a defensive coordinator, and mm-hmm. they did really, really well when he was there. So he's obviously a good coach, and to just put the blame on him to have that team fall apart the way it did when the GM was the one that fucked him over, because I remember seeing the video of Vrabel looking like bewildered when they were like, oh, we just traded AJ Brown for a first round pick. He was like, what the fuck are we doing? And I don't blame him. I said the same thing watching the draft. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's Treylon Burks was the pick. I think it was probably not the best idea, obviously. I think the initial report in camp that year was that he was struggling with like breathing issues, like asthma. So I think it got off to a rocky start. He has not done any favors to his own career, and now is fighting for probably a roster spot at this point where he needs to contribute on special teams as a former first round pick is not the career arc anyone wants.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, could be worse. He could be N'Keal Harry.
Mr. Tight End N'Keal Harry.
Oh my God. I can't believe you sent me that report right before we started recording. I saw that and I was like, I didn't even know he was still in the league. That fucking clown. Gonna get me off on a whole nother tangent at this point.
We can go over bad draft picks if you want. Like, the Jaguars literally have endless ones, so I can talk about that all night.
I mean, Patriots too. I was going to say, Patriots for the last, like, 5 or 6 years, we're probably right up with Jacksonville on everything. So we'll see how this year turns out. But
do you guys like Drake May?
Go ahead. You threw it at me last time. Go ahead, dickhead.
I'm optimistic. I'll use that word. I don't really want to see him play much this year. Like, if he's playing early in the season, there's a bad reason for it, in my opinion. I'd rather he sit behind. I've kind of already written off this season as it is what it is. They're going to build towards something. They obviously didn't spend any money in free agency. They have the most cap space, I think, after a certain date in the history of the league. So, like,
who wants to come here?
That's a good point. I think Jacksonville's been dealing with that same thing for a long time.
See, birds of a feather, man.
Money will get people where they want to be. You just have to overpay for them.
Mm-hmm. And unless your name's Calvin Ridley.
Well,
the Titans overpaid for Calvin Ridley.
See, that's but then didn't the report didn't Kraft say, oh, his wife didn't want him to come up here, where taxes are too high. Blah, blah, blah. So fuck you, Calvin Ridley.
I'm optimistic. You know, from what I've been seeing in the offseason, again, I don't really put much stock into OTAs and all these 11-on-11s. When you see the reporters throw out, like, oh, he was 4 of 7 and he had 2 interceptions, like, oh, big deal. Like, it's June and they're practicing. I'd rather he make the mistakes now than in July, August, and then obviously in the season. So we'll see. I think it's next year. Ask me that question and I'll have a more definitive answer on it. Hogan.
I mean, you saw the reaction I had on draft night where I wasn't thrilled about it. I think, again, I go to the end of the day that the fact that Wolf came out and was like, oh, at the 3 pick, we have like 17 guys that we're okay with taking at the number 3 pick just rubbed me the wrong way, because it's like, you have the number 3 pick. It's not 17 different guys you're okay with. It's, we got the guy that we fucking want at that position, which again goes back to my whole point about losing games so you can get that number 1 fucking pick, so that way you're not in that position. I digress. I don't know. I want to be, like I said, optimistic about it. I don't know enough about the kid. I didn't watch any North Carolina games this year. I've seen all the highlights and everything, and the potential's there. But again, like Burge said, if he's playing this year, we're off to a bad start, because I'm a huge believer in quarterback sitting, because I think it does more harm than good to just throw them into the fire, especially on a very bad team. Like, all due respect, we're going to circle the wagon here and go back to Trevor Lawrence. It did him no favors, I think, playing his rookie year. And again, it was a terrible situation with Urban Meyer and all that. That was just a clown show down there. Apologies, Jacksonville. I'm sorry.
No, we all agree with you.
I'm calling it as it is, okay? Yeah. But I also think it was it wasn't a terrible thing for Trevor, because at least it got him to where he needed to be that second year. But again, it's, would he have been better off riding the bench, learning a little bit more, not being put into shit situations that Urban Meyer threw him into his rookie year, and learning from the outside? Because like, I always go back to, you know, like Patrick Mahomes didn't play a snap until the final game of the season, his rookie year. And then look, he threw 50 touchdowns the next year. Granted, Patrick Mahomes is a once in a generation player. However, it always goes to show, like you go back to Aaron Rodgers, sat as long as he did behind Brett Favre. There's so many different examples of guys sitting and coming into their own rather than being thrown into the fire. Cause it's, how often do you see a Peyton Manning where they put up the shit numbers they do with the rookie year, and then you're Super Bowl contenders the next year? So again, need to cop out, but I don't know. I want to be optimistic, but I really don't know what Drake May is going to be. I hope he's amazing. I hope he wins Super Bowls. That's that'd be the greatest thing in the world. But until I see him play, we'll see.
Yeah. Same with every rookie. None of us know what they're going to do or what they're going to turn into. We could have all these all pros. We could have a bunch of busts. I feel like it's hard to say. I do think Drake May has a really good toolbox where he can make a difference with his athleticism and with his arm talent. I think the Patriots need to put some weapons around him. I think their wide receiver group makes me a little bit anxious, like looking at it, because it's hard to tell who is the wide receiver one or even going to start. Like it's kind of anyone's game there. So that's my only concern with Drake May, if he does get into the starting lineup this year, which I think he may, hopefully in London, when they play the Jaguars, I'd like to see that be his first game.
That'd be interesting for sure. But I was on board with being a Marvin Harrison Jr. guy all the way up into the draft, because it was just like, for me, it felt that he was that true talent that you don't pass up regardless of needing a quarterback. Like, I get you needed a quarterback, but like Marvin Harrison Jr. has the potential to be that game changer. He could be, I'm not saying he's going to be Justin Jefferson, but he has the potential to be Justin Jefferson. Where I don't think anybody's sitting there saying Drake May's got, you know, flashes of being like Brett Favre or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or anything like that, where Marvin Harrison Jr. had that stigma where his father was a freaking Hall of Famer. So you knew it was in the pedigree. Like, it more often than not, it's going to happen. Hopefully. I just don't know about Drake May. So,
like, what does Drake May's dad do? Do we know?
Oh, well, you know what I'm saying. I didn't mean.
I understand.
Regardless, yeah. Well, it's a basketball family, right? Didn't like, aren't his like brothers like? Didn't they win national championships for UNC? So, I get it, but at the same time, like Marvin Harrison went to Ohio State, where they dominated, other than Michigan, which. It's not like Ohio State has a cakewalk for a schedule, or UNC plays not great teams and they went, 7-5? So again, it's the adversity versus the talent pool versus all the other things where, I don't know. I mean, I'm starting to like wonder if that, what is it, that Joe Milton kid that we took in the sixth round? Like, I'm curious to see him play, what he could bring at the pro level. Granted, I know there's a whole backstory behind him and whatnot, and the whole sixth round pick, he was played for Michigan, we know that, blah 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 blah. I'm not buying into that crap, but I'd like to see what he can do, because that's one thing that I feel like we never got a chance to really see with Belichick when he was here, was like, was it Malik Cunningham, right? Like, he lit New England on fire in preseason, and we never got to see him on the field other than like, oh, go pretend to be a wide receiver for this one play and then come out, and then we're going to cut you 14 times and then you're going to go to Baltimore.
That's what he is in Baltimore now, though. He's a wide receiver.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, we had the opportunity. We were a shit team last year. We had the opportunity to fuck around and find out what he could do at different positions or anything. And it was just like, no, we're going to play Bailey Zappi and win one fucking game the rest of the year. So, yeehaw. I don't know. I'm rambling now. Somebody else talk.
Let's move on. Let's move on. We got the New England dots out of the way here. I don't need to hear Hogan rant anymore. I hear it enough. It's prediction time for the AFC South.
Yeah, let's do it.
You go first. Jacksonville fan, go first.
All right. I have the Jaguars and the Texans finishing 10-7. I am going to be a homer and say that the Jaguars do edge out the division and that the Texans take a wild card team or a wild card spot. I do think that's interchangeable, to be honest. I really do think that could go either way. I think the Texans probably have a little bit higher of a ceiling than the Jaguars do this year, just based on like schedule and things like that. I do think that the Texans have a brutal stretch down the towards the end of the season where they have to play Jacksonville in Jacksonville, which they always win. So maybe that's not a hard game. The Dolphins, the Chiefs, the Ravens all in a row. They have the Cowboys 2 games before the Jaguars, Lions, Jets, etc. So it's no cakewalk for them. I think the Jaguars are going to start off super slow, but I think they will build through the year. Their first 4 games are against all playoff teams and really difficult start to the schedule. I think the Colts finish 8-9. I do think Anthony Richardson misses some time, which leads to that. I think if he's healthy, he's right in the discussion for a 10-win season. I think it's not out of reach. I think that Titans win 4 games next year. I think they go 4-13. I'm not quite as low as you are, Hogan, on their overall like talent. I do think that they have a very difficult schedule, and I think Levis is not the answer, so that's where that comes from.
What, me? You want me to talk now? Or I thought you were sick of me talking.
I want to hear you talk before I talk.
Well, yeah, I think the whole world wants to hear me talk before we hear you talk.
Fair enough. That's why I'm
anyway. I'm not far off from you, buddy. I'm thinking that Jacksonville, believe it or not, as much shit as I talked, I can see them returning to being division champs this year as long as everything goes right. Like I said, I think Peterson's a great coach. I think Lawrence can take that extra step this year. I'm interested to see how they fare with the Texans at this point. Like I said, Texans could be the pretenders. They could be the contenders. It all plays off of like how Diggs fits in, how that defense works out. So give me Jacksonville and Houston in a tight race there. I don't think that Indy's going to be as bad as we're counting them out to be with maybe I can see them being, you know, maybe 9-8, maybe 10-7. That could be a really tight division with those three teams pushing for playoff spots where we're so used to seeing, what is it, like the AFC North, where like Steelers, Ravens, Bengals are always clogging up the playoff spots every year, it seems like. I could see that turning into the AFC South very, very easily, depending on how they battle each other down there. I won't go as far as to say what I think their overall actual records are going to be, other than I think Tennessee's ceiling is like 5 games. So I'm being generous. I'm being generous, Tennessee. So again, fuck you. Fourth place. Suck it. Burge, what do you got?
I'm in agreement. I'll start off. I'm not going to talk about Tennessee anymore. I agree with both of you. I think they're going to be a dumpster fire. I don't think they're going to be vying for a top five pick in the NFL draft. I have similar thoughts on the Texans and the Jaguars, other than the fact that I think the Texans are going to be a lot better next year. I think they're going to grow. Honestly, you can call it a non-hot take or cold take. I don't know. But I think that the Texans are going to be vying for a top seed in the conference next year. And that's a little bit of bias because of how much I've enjoyed watching them while my Patriots have sucked. But I really like them to take the next step. They've done everything, at least on paper, to build on last season, you know, surrounding CJ Stroud with more talent on that offense. And obviously, John, like you hit on about their defense, like it's as stacked as their offense is. So I have them like fighting for the 1 or 2 seed in the AFC next year. And I think Jacksonville will make the playoffs. I think they'll be a wild card. I do like the Texans. Again, I'm not going to go through the whole record, but to maybe win that division by, you know, 2 games at the end of the day. But yeah, the Colts, they're a team that, you know, obviously ride on Anthony Richardson's health. They don't have Gardner Minshew there anymore to kind of step in and be a stopgap. He's left. He did very well when he played with the Colts last year. He filled right in. And the fact that they were able to do that, it was like us as Patriots fans being like, why couldn't we do that when our quarterback either got hurt or sucked? Like, why didn't we have a guy like that behind Mac Jones? Instead, we were stuck with Bailey effing Zappi. So like, that was hard to watch as a Patriots fan being like, well, this could have been us. This could have been us fighting for a playoff spot. At the end of the day, it probably was for the best that they weren't. But I don't think the Colts will make the playoffs. I think they'll be kind of one of those bubble teams at the end of the year that are fighting for that spot. But I think it'll be kind of the same situation that happened this year with them kind of being on the outside looking in at the end. But the bias in me really wants to see that Houston Texans team take that next step and make a deep playoff run. And I think it starts by getting a top seed in the conference going into the playoffs.
The AFC, I will say, is not the conference you want to play in this year. Like, it is so stacked at the top and throughout. Like, the first 10 teams are all really, really good, and any one of them can really make a breakout, I think. The AFC North, which you called out, is, like, as good as they've ever been. I think the Browns should push that division this year. I think the Steelers are going to be really sneaky in that division. I think the Bengals are always kind of that perennial since Joe Burrow has come in. Top team. I think Mahomes, it's hard to argue against the Chiefs taking the number one seed and even being like a Super Bowl contender again this year. The AFC is so crowded and stacked. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see.
You even look at the AFC East outside of the Patriots, all three, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets have an opportunity on paper right now to be as good as, you know, fighting for those spots as the rest of the teams you named. Like, on paper, those teams, I think the AFC East is going to be an absolute battle this year. The Bills aren't as good as they were, and I think that it could be just as close as those other, you know, the AFC South, the AFC North, like we just talked about. I don't think those teams are as good as, you know, the Steelers, the Bengals, the Ravens. I think that, you know, those teams are better than the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, all of them. Yeah. But we'll see how it shakes out. Like, I totally agree with you. The AFC is absolutely stacked at the top, and I wouldn't want to be. It's a kind of a good year to be sitting that one out, right?
Yeah.
At this point, like I said, I'm on record as saying if we're picking in the top five again next year as Patriot fans, I'm more than okay with that, because I want to see us picking that high again, because, like you touched on, we got to get some weapons at wide receiver at this point. The rest of the division, the rest of the AFC just gets better every year, and it seems we just get worse with what we're at right now. Like you said, I think Kendrick Bourne's our number one wide receiver coming off a torn ACL. And yeah, I loved him before, but it's like, is he going to be the same player? Are we going to see the same expectations where the Bills are a little bit rebuilding, but I'll still take Josh Allen over any talent that we have on the Patriots roster right now. So yeah, the AFC is absolutely going to be a powerhouse. I can't imagine, you know, NFC teams really fucking with the AFC this year. I mean, because the NFC feels like it's gotten worse over time as well, where the 49ers, I mean, look at the NFC playoffs last year, right? I mean, Dallas got smoked by Green Bay. I mean, Green Bay is really the one team that we can see taking that next giant step if they're able to put everything mm-hmm. together after their run they had last year. But like, Dallas got smoked, and they were a really good team last year. The 49ers struggled against the Packers as well. And even then, the 49ers always fail at the end of the year. Like, they always seem to do it to the Chiefs or whoever it is. But the Rams took a significant step back with Aaron Donald leaving, and Matt Stafford he's getting ancient up there. Cooper Kupp can't stay healthy sometimes. So it's so hard to predict, especially this time of year, what's going to happen. And you always try and use hindsight with like, oh, well, last year this happened. But they're brand new teams every time going into the new year. And like I said, I'm excited to see what the AFC South is going to be, because for a long time, the AFC South was always a joke where it was the Colts with Peyton Manning and everybody else underneath it. You guys aren't jokes anymore down there. It's going to be good football to watch and see how you guys contend, not only against each other, but against the top tier teams in the rest of the league. Like, Kansas City doesn't have a cakewalk anymore as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, it'll be good shit. I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of splitting matchups in the AFC South. I think a lot of us are going to go 1-1 against each other, maybe outside the Titans. I think Titans get swept by a few of us. But I don't foresee like the Texans just being like so dominant where who could even keep up with them. I do think it'll be a scrap at that level of play, but looking forward to it.
Going to be great stuff. I'm really looking forward to the season. I've been talking, you know, putting the tweet out not too long ago about how I think it's like 15 Sundays left until football season. I'm just counting down the days training camp starts, because that's when you really know that we're back. And this is like kind of that dead point of the summer where, like, mm-hmm. I'm not a baseball guy. You know, I could care less about, you know, I know the Celtics are in the NBA finals. I honestly couldn't care less about it. I'm not a basketball guy.
Let's go. I am. I'm ready to see it.
I'm obviously rooting for them, but like, you know, my Bruins ended, you know, weeks ago, and I'm like, all right,
I think we can root for Edmonton, though, right? Like, we can all agree that we're on the Edmonton bandwagon.
Oh, he's a Canadian bitch. He doesn't want to see any Canada teams win.
Canada curse is alive and well for 31 years. I want to see it continue. And I'll be honest with you, I love the way the Panthers play. Outside of the, you know, a couple of the guys that throw the cheap shots, like I love their style of play. And Matthew Tkachuk is hated around here. I actually wish he was a Boston Bruin so bad because of his physicality and the fact that he can actually score. Like, wish he could have signed here. I really do. But let's move on. Hogan, you got something you want to talk about?
I do. So I know some people have heard about it. John, you might not have heard about it. I don't know if you're into video games at all, but Ace and I, and if you don't know who Ace is, he is Burgess's co-host on Two Pad Stacks over on that podcast. Ace and I have created a new video game podcast that we recorded our first episode this week. And believe it or not, by the time this episode is airing, it's going to be live on Spotify, Apple, all the things that you can get your podcasts on. We have this podcast called Rings and Things, and it is just nothing but good old-fashioned video game talk. We talk about game reviews, previews, Sony exclusives, Xbox stuff. We're all over the map with everything, and we had such a blast recording it. Yeah, I was going to say filming it would be a little weird, huh? Recording it, yeah, yesterday. And like I said, it's good old fashioned, just fanboying over some of the nerdiest shit you can talk about, whether it's Star Wars, video games, anything. Rings and Things, look it up. It's going to be dropping Wednesdays, and I think we're going to be doing bi-weekly. We're still working out the details. Like I said, only the first episode has been recorded. But on top of that, we are officially launching our new production company that all of these podcasts are wrapping up in with, Midnight Ride Productions. So if you guys out there listening have any interest whatsoever in anything media related that you are passionate about, whether it's podcasts, blogging, live streaming, anything, if you're passionate about it and you want to have a voice heard and you want to come to people that are willing to either listen to you, walk you through it, set you up, whatever you are looking for, Midnight Ride Productions. If you Google it, it's going to be midnightrideproductions.net. not.com.net, where you can join the rebellion, as it's so famously put on the front. And you'll see the awesome logo we got with Paul Revere riding at midnight warning about the British coming, which is interesting because I think isn't the Patriots Jacksonville game in London this year?
It is.
That's right. This damn Jacksonville Jaguars are coming. That's what I'm going to be saying when it comes to that shit. So we'll be enemies that week, John. But after that, I'll be rooting for Jacksonville going forward. We'll be all set with that. But anyway, like I said, guys, going back to my little pitch here, Midnight Ride Productions is the media company that we are just getting going with, obviously in the very, very early stages of everything. But Breaking the Plane, Two Pad Stacks, Rings and Things are just the very fresh beginnings of this media company. This revolutionary media, as we're coining it. I like the wordplay there. It's pretty good, huh? So if you guys get a chance, check out midnightrideproductions.net if you're interested in any of that stuff. And then on top of that, too, Rings and Things, the newest podcast from MRP Media.
Let's go.
I just want to say London. I know you guys picked the Patriots to win in London against Jacksonville. That will not happen. Just to be clear, I will put any amount of money you want on that game. Jaguars are going to win easily in London.
Okay. All right. Even with Drake May playing?
100%. Especially if Drake May plays.
I love it. I love the cockiness. Let's get it going.
I smell a guest appearance the week before that game.
Make it happen.
Well, John, I just want to say thank you for coming out with us tonight to do this. It's been a blast. Your insight into the Jacksonville side of things is incredible. Hopefully it put Hogan in his place a little bit with his trolling. It sounds like he did. It sounds like he did because now he's rooting for Jacksonville outside of the London game. So it seems like you accomplished your goal of coming on here tonight. But I just wanted to come out and say it was great to reconnect with you. It's been a while outside of, you know, interacting on Twitter, and I want to do it again. I want to do it again in the future. So just want to say that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, guys. It really was a good time. And all kidding aside, love the discourse and looking forward to more in the future. But
Absolutely.
Yeah, I loved having you on, buddy. It was A, great to meet you. B, like I said, I'm just a troll when it comes to this shit. You guys know this by now. I don't really feel that way about Jacksonville. I just had to ruffle some feathers and get those other Jacksonville fans down there all pissed off at me. It's what I do best. I piss off Burgess every day. So I was like, you know what? I got to move on to bigger and better things. So I was like, you know what? Jacksonville, let's get them. So now I'm moving on to Tennessee. So let's see if the Tennessee Titan fans want to come at you. Me, bro. Let's
just
go.
Just at me and I'll show up.
That's right.
A funny story about that is the reason he wasn't coming at me that episode, because that was a solo show for Hogan that he started calling out Trevor Lawrence, so he needed to find somebody to go at.
Of course.
Jaguars fans are rabid, man. You gotta tread carefully sometimes. Even internally, we have some like strife on Twitter, so.
Oh, don't worry about it. So one of my life, like one of my goals is like my bucket list. I want to get to every NFL stadium at one point in my life. And I've been to Gillette a bazillion times, and I've actually been to Dallas twice. So at some point I got to make my trek around the map to get to all the stadiums. And I, at one point when, you know, the Patriots were in the middle of their dynasty and I was, you know, that cocky asshole that was always like, fuck you, 6 rings, blah, 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 blah. Like, I was like, okay, if I ever go to the Meadowlands, I'm going to get murdered. If I ever go to Buffalo, I'm going to get murdered. If I ever go to Baltimore, I'm going to get murdered. If I go to Indianapolis, I'm going to... So I had like a murder list of like, okay, I can't go to these stadiums right now. And I never honestly was like thinking in my head, like, okay, Jacksonville's one I need to worry about. But then after we did this podcast and I started getting the chirps after my solo show, I was like, oh, fuck, I might not be able to go to Jacksonville anymore. This sucks. But I'll get down there someday. So I'll go to London.
That's right.
Well, technically, is that a home game for you guys?
I'm not sure, but very likely, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I'll get to London. We'll make it a little truce party there where I'll meet some more Jacksonville fans and I'll be like, hey, we're good now, guys. Okay. I promise you.
Quick tip on going to Jacksonville eventually, try to do a later game. I don't know if you remember the 2018 Patriots Jaguars game after the conference championship the year before. It was like one of the hottest games in the history of the NFL. I think it was like top 5. I was at that game. We did win, which was great. It was a great game. But I think I lost about 10 pounds of water weight just based on sweating in the stands. So insider tip for you.
All right. I'll make a note to either it's London or December is when I'm going to hit down there. So that's fine. I got you.
That's good.
Well, that'll put a wrap on episode 33. Again, thank you, John Hogan. As always, it's a pleasure. We'll catch all y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.